Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to a special bonus edition of today's Football Times. I'm Aidan Williams and today we'll be discussing the wonder that is Marcus Rashford and the incredible campaigns he's led this year relating to child poverty, demonstrating how football fame can be used as a force for good, as well as how public opinion can just sometimes force governments to back down. Joining me today are a few of our regulars. Firstly, a man who has never failed to highlight Rashford's efforts. Anytime he's been on this pod series before, and so is the perfect person to guide us through this discussion. Matthew Gibbs, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on. If we're going to spend an hour talking about any individual footballer, quite happy to do about Rashford.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. He's the man of the moment, isn't he?
Absolutely.
We've also got Paul McParlin with us today, whose idea this pod was. Hi, Paul.
Hi, yeah, looking forward to this one. Glad to have Matthew on board today as well with his in-depth knowledge about Marcus Rashford as well. But isn't it refreshing to have a whole podcast based on a good news story about a footballer who's not only proving himself on the pitch, but also in general society as well?
Very much so, very much so. And finally, another familiar voice to our listeners, Stuart Horsfield. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Aidan, you okay?
Doing very well, thank you. Yes, yourself?
Very, very excited. I'm really, really honoured, pleased to be asked to be on this. It's right in my sweet spot when it comes to sort of football and its cultural influence and societal influence. This is when it was muted. I was sort of hovering around waiting for the offer for hands to go up so I could quickly throw up the hand and be like, yeah, I don't mind.
Well, spot on. We've got all of that and more in this one today. So let's just jump right into it then. So to start us off, Matthew, I mean, first we'll talk a little bit about the lay of the land, as it were. Child poverty is obviously something that it may have hit the headlines more prominently this year, of course, thanks to Marcus Rashford in large part. But it's been an issue that's been present for a long time, hasn't it? I want a couple of stats to throw at you to start us off, to put it in context. The Child Poverty Action Group, they indicate that in 2018-19, there were 4.2 million children living in poverty in the UK. That's 30% of children. Updated stats for July this year, break it down a bit further. When it comes to lone parent families, it increases to 44% of children living in poverty, while in black and minority ethnic families, it's 46%, which doesn't compare favourably to the 26% in white British families. It's a bleak picture overall, isn't it, Matthew?
It's horrifying. It's I think I've spent the last few days like you doing research about this and some of the stats you can find out and some of the, you know, when you find out about the woeful inequality in terms of like geography when it comes to finance in Britain is really difficult. It's like it's quite dark to read about. I know I read a Financial Times article and the subheading read, "Other countries have poor bits, Britain has a poor half." And you know, talking about how rich a country Britain is, like the sixth or in the top 10 richest countries in the world, for them to then rank 28th in the world for regional inequality, and then to, you know, have some, I saw some stats about food banks. You know, food banks shouldn't exist in the first place, because, you know, everyone has a right to eat and right to have warm meals every day. But food banks have exploded from 50, 10 years ago to 1,400 now, which is, it's difficult. It's a really horrible thing to read about, horrible thing for people to live through. And I think this can be traced back a lot further. I think if you go back to 2010, to when David Cameron's Conservative government won election, elected in the shadow of the 2008 global recession, and they sold austerity measures as something vital to protecting the future of Britain. But it's been 10 years now and people, you know, there are still these measures are still in place that are decimating like the north of England especially, and people are suffering, and it's horrible. It's one of those things that's really difficult to put into words how difficult it must be to live through something like that.
Well, absolutely, and to veer this slightly towards football and Paul, a number of clubs, fans, groups, players have all played their part in running, assisting and donating to food banks in recent times. As Matthew says, obviously they're becoming much more prevalent in society at the moment. I guess if we take a positive spin on things before we get into some of the other issues, it at least shows the ways in which communities can help each other using football as the conduit.
Yeah, I mean, we did a podcast here in the week, myself, Stu, and Gary, and our guest that day, Dr. Kevin Moore, you know, made a big thing about the role of football history in society. And I think this is a really fascinating period of how football's reflecting the change in society at the moment. Certainly, football clubs make more of an effort to become involved with supporting the deprived elements of their local community. I mean, certainly, 10 years ago, when you went to watch a Premier League game, I'm sure it's the same as Newcastle, as Everton, there weren't people collecting food parcels outside the ground. It just wasn't a thing. But I think Matthew's, when he mentioned there before about austerity kicking in 2010, that was when it was more and more a thing that they were pleased, you know, for food banks, for community support. I know Everton at the time with the Everton Community Programme did a lot of work in terms of trying to help and provide food and support for families who were really struggling to get through. And I think longer term as well, although football clubs are making the right statement and, you know, are putting lots of things into place, I personally feel they should be doing a lot more. I think there could be an awful lot more support for families on low incomes. And when you think at the moment football is very much a middle-class game, when you think the average age of support is less like 45 and above, it almost seems as though young working class kids have almost been priced out of the game. And this to me is a real opportunity to get them back involved in the game. I mean, this might be before your time, Aidan, but same when I was growing up, I remember going at Everton, you could go into the boys' pen for a ridiculously cheap fee. You know what I mean? If you survived, that was a different matter, but the principle was still the same. I remember going to Newcastle one time for an away game, seeing the queue for the boys' pen there, and every second person in there had a beard trying to get in on the cheap price. So it just shows that, you know, there's always been, in the past, clubs have kind of priced the product more realistically. I just think that I worry at the moment because I think it's a whole generation of young working class kids growing up who will never get to see a live Premier League football game because they just can't afford it. And if you're a family on a budget, the one thing you're going to cut back on straight away is the cost of a football game because it's so prohibitive at the moment.
Yes, so we come now anyway to the COVID pandemic, of course, and this has raised the stakes somewhat on issues of poverty, inequality and so on. And the issue of free school meals in the school holidays obviously became a major issue this year thanks to the campaigning of Marcus Rashford. So, Stu, it's a case of Rashford using his platform to highlight the experience of his own upbringing, in this case, and how it's impacted others today. But I had a quote from Rashford here. He recently said that, "I don't want any child to go through what I went through and any parent to experience what my mother experienced." I mean, he's displaying an understanding based on experience far beyond what anyone in government seems capable of displaying, isn't he?
It is. I mean, to begin with, we shouldn't be having this podcast, is the first statement, I think. This should never be a podcast that we should be having. And that's not to say, like I said at the beginning, that it was one that I wanted to be a part of and obviously one that I wanted to join in. And we are having it. I suppose it's quite idealistic to be wishing that we didn't have it. But with regards to Marcus Rashford and his platform, I mean, we did sort of a political football thing with Gary. And we've talked about footballers, you know, who use their privileged position, if you like, or certainly a position that elevates them above the sort of everyday person in the street. And some do use that platform and take advantage of that platform to use it for good. And Marcus Rashford has very much done that. And I think the bit that strikes me is that he's done it because he's so young. He's still so young. When professional footballers are put into that professional football environment, you forget, you know, you assume that it comes with maturity because they have the physicality of adults, but yet they're still, you know, young men. You know, Marcus Rashford, the maturity that is displayed, you know, displays his, sort of belies his years. And then when you put that into context with the behaviour, comments, not of all people in government or all members of parliament, but certainly amongst some of them, his the maturity that is shown, that the considered, I think the considered approach, the considered statements that he's made, the open letters that he writes, it's an incredibly mature campaign, and it's been sustained without being forced down people's throats. And because it's come from first-hand experience, it sounds really authentic. And I suppose what I mean by that is that the response by government at times, as you said there, Aidan, you know, he seems to be able to relate to it and can relate to it far better than members of parliament or members within the government can. And I think that comes through in his discussion, in his argument, is how relatable, you know, he sticks to point. He doesn't dramatize anything. He sticks to the facts, and he speaks from his own experience. And with that is the authenticity that comes right through his message, and responses from government that don't recognize what he's saying almost further emphasizes just how relatable and how accurate his sort of his topic is, his discussion points actually are, because he's coming at it from a boy who's lived it, as part of a family who lived it, of a part of a family who went through it. You know, it's almost like he's almost having to educate the government first before they'll then make decisions, which, you know, we elect members of parliament, we elect government to look after us, and yet here we have a situation where a young man is actually almost doing the informing and educating for people who are essentially in charge of the country. Like I say, I have nothing but admiration for what he's doing, but also the way that he's gone about it.
Why don't you think we see more players or other people in of such profile, similar profile, engaging on political or social issues like this? Do you think? I mean, is it prevailing anti-intellectualism in sport or football in particular, or lack of education, or is it simply unease about the flack that they'll likely face as a result? Do you think, Matthew? Because obviously, Rashford's putting himself up to be shot at a bit, isn't he, by doing this? As much as, you know, he's galvanised a lot of the country to support his case, but he's sort of putting himself up there above in the firing line, isn't he, a little bit?
I think there's a lot of elements to play with that. I think a lot of it has come down to, like, micromanaging of football clubs, to where they have, like, you know, every small aspect of a footballer's life is controlled now down to, this is what you say in interviews, this is what you eat for breakfast tomorrow and what you eat for breakfast the day after. These are the pills you take. I mean, I remember watching something about Liverpool's training schedule last season, and like when they come into the training ground, they each have their own little pigeonhole where they have the boots, and they have like specific pills and specific the vitamins that they have to take every day. Everything is so micromanaged. It doesn't allow them that sort of flexibility and that freedom to, you know, maybe do something like this, or if they have that sort of passion, there's not that space for them to do that. Also, I think this is something we've mentioned on another podcast before, but people tend to forget, I think, as both Paul and Stu alluded to, like, these are kids. Footballers are like kids that get millions of pounds thrown at them. And if that's not something that messes up with your head, like, I get scared when I get paid every month, and that's like, that's nothing compared to what people, you know, what these footballers earn. That amount of money and that amount of scrutiny and that amount of everything you do is hyper focused on. I can't imagine having to cope with that, and therefore it must have some sort of impact where, I don't know, screws with your head, and you know, you get to see footballers get into trouble. But then there is, again, like you said, the anti-electoralism where, people, I don't even know why this has started, but people perceive footballers as being dumb, which, I mean, it isn't the case. That human beings like the rest of us, they all have their own, you know, interests and desires and wants and needs and stuff. And yeah, I think there's a mixture of stuff, but I think what Rashford has done, like what Stu said, I think it has been so smart. It has been like a perfectly crafted and driven campaign down to everything from it being an almost apolitical thing, as in where he's not accusing the government of something, he's not saying this is a conservative problem, he's saying this is, we just need to feed kids. He's not siding with like the Labour Party, he's not saying I'm with the Labour Party on this, he's just saying, look, all the parties need to come together to feed kids in need. And I think, yeah, it's been perfectly crafted and perfectly driven so that it picks up this traction and picks up this momentum that I think it's like three U-turns that he's forced the government into now. Is like, even by the third one, even when they rejected the petition in Parliament, you kind of always felt, yeah, but he's going to push this through. This thing has momentum. He's inspired a nation to sort of, you know, it's like a call to arms. He's inspired an entire nation to help kids in need. So, yeah, it's incredibly impressive.
It is incredibly impressive. And obviously, you know, it's been petitions and Twitter comments and so on. He hasn't actually had to sort of get up on a platform and make speeches or anything like that. It's been, I don't want to say by stealth, but, you know, he hasn't had to sort of stand up and shout from the barricades or anything like that. It's just captured the hearts and minds of so many.
Sorry to jump in, but I think because I work in like PR and I work in this sort of thing, so when you look at the sort of PR aspects of what he's done, it's like perfect. And then when you think of the reverse and you think of like when these petitions go to government and how the government didn't see the headlines the next day, Tories refuse to feed starving children, how can they not see that is terrible PR? And everything that like Marcus Rashford has done is just, he has looked amazing. And it is, I mean, I think, you know, was it the task force he put together, which was all these like supermarkets and brands that have come together to ensure that they feed children. They're just jumping on the PR hype train. They're just doing it because it makes their companies look good. But who cares? They're doing something amazing. They're feeding children. They're helping people in need. So in terms of like the PR side of things, I think that has been interesting to look at as well.
Absolutely. I guess a common complaint from some, Paul, is that it's the lazy line that he should stick to football, as if simply being a footballer means he's not allowed views on anything else or the time to devote his attention to anything else. Some tried to claim his performances were suffering as a result of his campaigning, but if anything, the opposite seems to have been the case, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a lazy line to put out that footballers shouldn't be getting involved in such matters, because quite clearly, footballers reflect society. Of course, they should be getting involved in that matters, in those sort of matters. And also, given the kind of salaries that Premier League level that some can earn, I think that places more of a responsibility to kind of come out and be a bit more forthcoming about your view on what needs changing in society. I like Matthew's point there about the PR value as well, because I remember watching one of the press previews with on Sky News at 10:30 when Johnson turned down the Rashford initiative, you know, to extend the preschool meal provision. And even the lead writer of the Daily Mail was there saying, this is a disaster, he can't do that. You know, he's not taking on Keir Starmer here, he's taking on a footballer who knows what he's talking about. And as Matthew said, you know, from the Tories' point of view, that was just a PR disaster. I think as well, what he's done quite cleverly is, by not making it a party politics issue, he's made it a political issue that goes across all spectrums. No right-thinking person could actually object to what he's tried to do, because, you know, by every sort of moral standard, it's the only way forward. I mean, we look at Rashford's background as well. I mean, I think Man United deserve a bit of credit for as well in terms of the education they put in place for Marcus Rashford, because he grew up in Withenshaw, which is quite a notorious estate in Manchester. I think at one time it was the largest council estate in Europe. It's an area of massive deprivation. The primary school he went to, which had the lovely romantic sounding name Button Lane Primary, when he was there in 2007, I found the Ofsted report for this, and they're saying that attendance was poor, attainment was poor, and 2 years later was put into special measures. That was his primary school. Now, if he'd gone to his local secondary school, and once again, I checked the Ofsted reports for the secondary schools in Withenshaw, none of them get higher than satisfactory. Man United set up a link with Ashton-on-Mersey High School Academy in Sale, which is quite an affluent area, where they sent all their academy kids to. So Rashford attended there as a secondary school. When Rashford was there, it got outstanding. It was the fourth outstanding grade had been given. And one of the things the report said was the students were encouraged to speak, to have a view, to be educated, to express themselves articulately. So I think that decision as well to send them to that school actually gave them the confidence to realise his opinions were valued. As a matter of comparison, Gerard Piquet also attended that school when he was at Man United, and he's been quite vocal in terms of support for Catalan independence. So there is something about the education he received as well that enabled him to come forward and offer, you know, very, very considered opinions. And I think, as Matthew and Stuart have alluded to there as well, it's a heartfelt appeal. The guys live that experience. You cannot contest real life experiences like that. And I think you mentioned, Aidan, that he's not beyond a soapbox. No, he didn't have to be. It's just being very, very clever the way he's got his message out there. He's not upset people. He's not accused people. He's not trying to guilt trip people into getting involved. And straight away, I think, as Matthew alluded to there, firms want to jump on this bandwagon because they see it's good publicity for them. So if you're looking for a masterclass of how to conduct a campaign, then this would be a module in itself, the way that Rashford has simply united a whole country in favour of what was quite clearly such a huge injustice that at such a difficult time with the pandemic, etc., that the elements of society were suffering the most were those who needed the help the most.
Well, speaking of masterclasses, Stu, you know, you can introduce this as a module now on your college campus, can't you, of how to effectively dictate government policy from the sidelines. I mean, do you think his use of his platform will encourage others to follow his lead on issues close to them?
I hope so. I absolutely hope so. I think we talk a lot. I mean, we must talk most weeks, you know, between us about football. And I think, you know, one of you mentioned it at the beginning about how, you know, football, you know, is almost like a mirror of society, and, you know, and society is mirrored in football. And I think what Rashford has done is almost, is like you said there, is sort of proved a point that actually, you know, footballers or professional athletes do have opinions, do deserve opinions, are intellectual, can use their elevated platform for the common good. And I think all of that, and especially to sort of look at what Gareth Southgate has done with the England team as well, and the young players that are there. I mean, we only have to look at Raheem Sterling, you know, and the abuse that he suffered sort of in the lead up to the World Cup in 2018, and how well he handled that, and the maturity that he showed there, and almost turned the public opinion, or the certain sections of public opinion, about him as a footballer. And it's ignorance. A lot of it is ignorance about how people perceive footballers, and this stereotypical, you know, lack of education. And as you know, Paul's clearly done his research there. You know, that's nothing that, you know, that's certainly nothing that can be leveled at Marcus Rashford or what Manchester United do. You know, as I saw mentioned at the beginning, these footballers are thrust into this high pressure situation, and they have to learn so much, and they learn so much in the way of social skills, how to conduct themselves. They might not learn trigonometry or Pythagoras, or, you know, what they're learning is they're learning about the world, they're learning how to conduct themselves, they're learning how to use their platform. And I think, like I say, I think what Gareth Southgate has done within the England team is give the young players a voice. He's given young players the opportunity. I think Raheem Sterling is part of his senior team, as he likes to call it, amongst his players, you know, and Raheem Sterling is a part of that. And I think when you have players like Jadon Sancho in there as well, it's a very young England side who clearly get on really well together. You know, they will have, obviously they'll have seen and heard what Marcus Rashford has done. They'll talk to him about it in person at the England get-togethers. And you would like to think that now this sort of glass ceiling has been broken by a high-profile footballer. And I think, you know, like Matthew said, nothing bad's happened. Nothing bad's happened to Marcus Rashford. Nothing bad's happened to his reputation. And as you said there, Aidan, performances haven't fallen. You know, there's been no detraction from his ability. What it's actually done is sort of put out and say, look, footballers do have opinions, they do have voices, they do have lived experiences. Whether the country decides to listen to them, the country will decide to listen to whoever it wants, whether they're artists, pop stars, film stars, that's irrelevant. The country will decide who it wants to listen to. And I think so long as the person who is doing the talking is making a considered, informed discussion or point, the majority of the country will listen, regardless of where their background lies or what their profession is. And I think that just hopefully that what Marcus Rashford has done, and I think he has done, I think he's done it really well, is actually show that, you know, look, this is a young, an intelligent young man who has a point to make. And Matthew's right. This has not been aimed at the Tory party. It's not been aimed at the Labour party. He's not aligned himself with anybody. What he's done is identified a problem that he can relate to, and he's passed social comment and given people decisions to make and asked potentially difficult questions of government. And there were questions that needed asking. Now, footballers are in a position where they can ask questions and are more likely to be heard than if we're asking the questions. And he's taken that responsibility and used it very, very well. And I hope that other footballers will also use this platform to ask other questions, be it racism, sexism, financial inequality, whatever it is. So long as they are asking the right questions and coming from informed, considered perspectives, I can only see it being a good thing for the country, good thing for government, and hopefully it perpetuates itself so that more and more young people get involved in what is happening with the not so much the ruin of the country, but how this country is moving forward, because they're the generation that are gonna inherit it.
Well, great. So I mean, his campaign obviously caught fire significantly over the summer, and again more recently, quickly resonating with so many. I mean, the impact he's had, as we mentioned, has been quite extraordinary. So he's forced the government into several U-turns, as Matthew mentioned, which they'll make a tangible difference to people's lives. But even without those U-turns, he'd made a difference anyway, as we say, with a growing list of businesses, cafes, restaurants, and individuals, of course, giving food, time, and money to help. Half term went by recently without any government support for child hunger in terms of school meals and so on. But thanks to Rashford, of course, so much was done anyway, as we're mentioning there. But we are living through quite extraordinary times at the moment, of course, Matthew, aren't we? And would such a campaign in less extreme times have captured the hearts and minds to the same extent, do you think?
I think it would. Because it's such a basic basic humanity right, you know. Children need food, children should eat. And it's like if someone mentioned, but you can't argue against feeding children. It's the most basic of fundamental, you know, needs that I think even if this had happened last year when, you know, coronavirus didn't exist, I think it still would have taken off the way it has. And it's like, it's just what you've said, is everything about it has been perfectly curated and made to make a tangible difference. And I think to echo what Stu said, it goes beyond, like he's helped feed what 1.4 million children across Britain, something like that. But it goes beyond that, because you see like the reaction on Twitter, you see how other countries covered it, you see how children are now dressing up as Marcus Rashford and like dressing up as their hero because he's done this thing that has made a huge difference to their lives, which is incredibly sweet. But it means that these kids are going to grow up with Rashford as their hero, like a proper working class hero of old that we haven't had for a while. And I think the timing emphasizes it, you know, during the pandemic when people need more help than ever. I mean, I don't know how many people have been put out of work this year or on furlough. And you look at the numbers, it's really scary about how many people are now in that position where they need additional help. But I think it emphasizes it, but I still think he would have found a way. And I think he definitely would have found a way, because I just remembered, everyone forgets about this, I totally forgot myself, but he was doing activism last year in over winter when he was helping, I can't remember what the charity was called, but raising money for homeless people to make sure that they had a plate of food to eat and for places to sleep. And I think he raised like 20 million last year over winter. Which shows like how this is his passion. This is what he wants to do in life. This is what he wants to do with his platform, which is just, it's commendable. I think, the pandemic emphasizes it, but I think he would have found a way.
Well, I guess as a follow-up to that then, I'll come to you again, Matthew, since you're on a roll there. Would it have had such an impact if it was being done by someone who wasn't a footballer, possibly someone who, or maybe a footballer who isn't quite as high profile as Rashford?
It's a good question. And I don't know the answer to that, because I think he has used his platform perfectly and, like we said, in a non-aggressive, non-offensive way, and done it in a sort of children first approach that nobody can argue with. I don't know, because the footballers get so much coverage in this country compared to everything else. And it's such a, it has big, Rashford's campaign is such outside of the norm. Like, it's not something you usually see footballers doing or someone in that position doing. So therefore it has extra impacts and has extra, oh, look what this footballer's doing. Yeah, it's a difficult one. I don't know. I don't think it would have had the same impact. I think he's used his platform to perfection.
So if we talk about the government then, Paul, a little bit, why did they keep saying no? I mean, how did they misread the mood of almost the entire country so spectacularly badly to dig their heels in to this extent? Majority of MPs voted against free school meals for half term just a few weeks ago. Both in the summer and again now, they stuck to their guns only to change their minds once it became obvious which way the wind was blowing. How are they getting it so wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's very worrying, isn't it? You know, if they're getting something as simple as that so wrong, you do wonder where else they're going wrong with other, you know, important issues the country's dealing with at the moment. I think as well, it's, you know, I hate to use the phrase the Westminster bubble, but they are very isolated sometimes from real life real society, and they don't understand kind of lives that people are living. And I guess, you know, for a lot of the government members, you know, they leave their house and they chauffeur a different car to go to the House of Commons, they get in the chauffeur a different car, go back home to their house at the end of the day's session, and maybe, you know, the circles they move in, you know, the preschool meals issue just doesn't come across their radar. What concerns me most is the failure to learn from experience, because the Rashford's campaign was so successful first time around. Why on earth they didn't see it coming, that it was going to be even more successful second time around, I've no idea. And I think, you know, as Matthew and Stu have alluded to there, what Rashford has done very well is he's not made it about Marcus Rashford. He's made it about helping those who need the most help. And that's a really clever and subtle thing to do. And I think also that, but by raising this issue, he's created the profile for himself, and I don't actually think he wants that profile for himself. I think he's got the upper hand morally here, that people are listening to what he says because he's lived that experience himself. I found it fascinating this week too, if you look at football and policies on a more general level. So you compare Marcus Rashford's kind of interventions with those of Greg Clark, the FA chairman, this week when he's speaking to the select committee and coming out with every stereotype about different groups of society that you could possibly come up with in a 20-minute section. And they're watching and think, you know, this guy's in charge of the Football Association. And compared to the way Marcus Rashford has got the country behind him, they're watching this, I'll use the word buffoon, completely making a fool of himself in front of some of the leading government members there. And then you're thinking, well, hang on, this guy not only was in charge of the FA, he also ran cable and wireless. So what type of regime was he overseeing there as well? So I think interventions like that just make Marcus Rashford's case just look so much stronger. And I think it's, you know, His interventions have, you mentioned this before, Ryan, his interventions have won support across different football clubs. I know at the Everton Man United game, the Everton screen had a picture of Marcus Rashford thanking him for the work that he's done. I'm sure other clubs did as well. I didn't see that. And I think he's almost achieved a unique feat of uniting, you know, fans of United City, Everton, Liverpool, Newcastle, Tottenham, you know, across the country, because nobody can object to what he's done. And everyone's just totally full of admiration for him. Stu, can I just ask you, you work with 16 to 19 year olds, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, the college that I, it's funny because the college that I work at is in a massive area of social deprivation. And we have hundreds of kids at the college on free school meals. And what they see is they see somebody like Matthew said, who's this voice for them, it's like days gone by, almost like a Robin Hood type figure, somebody who's speaking for them. But it's not just somebody, it's somebody they can relate to, it's somebody who plays for Manchester United, somebody who plays for England, somebody who's a world famous footballer, and here he is fighting their corner, fighting their case. And it's almost, what it's done is, and it's, again, part of this campaign is so clever, But what he's managed to do far better than I could as their tutor is that he's managed to get them to take an interest in a situation that I think some of them didn't realize that they were part of. I think they almost look at it, saw it, and thought that doesn't apply to me, or that's something else. But Marcus, because of the way Marcus Rashford's done it, because how he's highlighted it, because he's brought it right to the forefront. You know, you hear about poverty in the UK, and it, you know, statistics can go out, but all of a sudden you have a footballer talking about free school meals during half-term holidays, and automatically the kids can think, can relate to that because we have them. You know, that instantly relate to it. Then what that does is that then creates an interest within them to find out more about what it is that Marcus Rashford's speaking about, which in turn is actually the situation that they're living and going through. And he's sort of, I'm not saying he's politicized or mobilized a generation, but what he's done is he's asked, or he's got young people actually thinking about moral consequences. He's got, you know, he's got people thinking about the state of the country, the state of the nation, the parts that people can play, what people can do, how you make your voice heard. And he's done it, like I say, I'm paid to teach them, but you know, Marcus Rashford's not, but he's done a far better job than I have of creating awareness around this situation.
That's so interesting. That's like, I know when we said that he's come at it sort of apolitically, but that's such bad news for like the future of the Tory party, because these kids that age and younger will remember that it was the Conservatives that rejected it in the first place. And even though, like, obviously Rashford didn't align himself with Labour or any other particular party, but that's got to be such bad news for like future of like the sort of more right-wing parties in Britain. Like, all these kids that are going to grow up idolising this working-class hero and knowing that they can make this kind of difference if they, you know, well, everyone can make that kind of difference is, I mean, it's amazing to hear. I've got to say, like, that's really interesting to hear.
Well, I mean, it is because they come at it, I mean, like I said, I teach from sort of level one, which is sort of pre-GCSE qualifications, right up to level five, right up to degree level students. And across that spectrum, you sort of, you have the more informed, balanced discussions. But at certain levels, it's as blunt as, well, Boris Johnson doesn't care, or, well, I ain't got any food today because Boris Johnson said so. And it's that simple. It is that black and white to some of them. But what he's, like I say, what Marcus Rashford's done is they've now started to think, well, hang on a minute. Why did the government not want to feed me, if you like, during half term? Or why has he said this? And he's got them asking questions, which is the most important thing. Marcus Rashford has got young people asking questions, because that's what Marcus Rashford's done. He's asked the questions that people wanted to ask of government. And then because of that, young people are now, granted they're asking me them, but but they're asking, you know, they are asking the questions. And as a tutor, as a teacher, that's what you want. You want inquisitive young people, because if they're inquisitive, you can inform them, educate them, and then they can take that information and go do with it what it is that they want to do with it. He's made my job a whole lot easier, is what he's done.
Sorry, Stu. So would you say then that the students that you work with then, Marcus Rashford's interventions have actually created a sense of political awareness amongst your students, and maybe students who in the past were kind of turned off by politics, or now would turn off about listening to politics on the news, developed more of an inquiring mind about the subject.
Absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. And it's funny because going back to the Raheem Sterling, I think it was literally just for the World Cup, and I'm sure one of the newspapers got a photograph of a tattoo that he has on his leg, and I think it's a rifle or a gun, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm
sure it's that. And sort of the couple of days after, and the students were sort of asking, you know, they were saying, why would the papers say that? Why would they do that? Why would they highlight that? Why are they making these comments going into a major tournament? Why are they, you know, and it, like I say, football is, you know, we know why we talk about, you know, we love the game so much, but football is such a unifying factor in this country. Not everybody, it doesn't unify everybody, but it unifies a lot of people, and a lot of people can relate to other issues within life or within their own life through football. And I think football as a whole probably could do more in terms of raising awareness, educating. There's a lot of good things that go on. I know there's a lot of good things go on, and there's a lot of good things that footballers do that probably we're not even aware of. I get all of that. But I think football in itself, not just Marcus Rashford, is in such a powerful position to raise awareness, to influence change, or even just to ask the questions, to create change, or maybe to start change. But now, yeah, it seems that young people and this current generation of England footballers are really sort of tapping into the conscious of the younger generation. I think more than ever, as much as we think footballers are so far removed because of wages and the lifestyles that they live, but actually what Gareth Southgate's done is actually almost make certainly the England team and the young England players far more relatable than they've probably been in, I don't know, five or six generations probably. And with that, it's like I say, it creates discussion in classrooms is what it's doing.
To emphasise that a bit, I mean, the response he gave when the government voted down the free school meals recently on Twitter laid bare how much he understood what so many politicians, particularly of the Tory variety, were failing to grasp. What he said was, "I don't have the education of a politician." Many on Twitter have made that clear, but I have a social education, having lived through this and having spent time with the families and children most affected. These children matter. These children are the future of our country. They're not just another statistic. And for as long as they don't have a voice, they'll have mine. So, I mean, that's powerful stuff, but it shows a maturity and empathy far beyond what those in government seem capable of showing. I mean, it's a terrible indictment of the state of the country and its government that the 23-year-old Manchester United striker has become arguably the most effective and eloquent and passionate politician in the country currently, in many ways. The way he's handled his responses, as Matthew alluded to earlier, they've been exemplary. But what does this say about our systems, institutions, government, that they can be so effectively outmaneuvered and defeated by a footballer speaking with a clarity of thought and a wealth of social experience and passion for helping others? Matthew, what do you think about that?
That's a big question. That is, I think, it doesn't say a lot about our government. And I think Stu hit the nail on the head, and Paul, when they talked about like who it is in charge of these institutions, like who is it that is in charge of the government? It's people that went to Eton. It's people that went to these sort of, you know, everything's passed down from generation to generation, higher, middle, upper class. I don't even know what you call them, that sort of class of people. When these people are in charge of like these institutions, they care about power. It's what we see when you look at the news and you see another new firm that was created 2 weeks ago has obtained a new contract for PPE that isn't usable, but they spent billions of pounds on it.
I think, obviously, the question that you're asking there is, you've got this complete contrast between, you know, as we've said, working class young man who has sort of lived on, you know, I think Paul who said that, you know, one of the largest council estates in Europe, and you have these people who have, you know, had this education, you know, arguably the best education that this country can offer, potentially the best education in the world, and yet what's happening is it's common sense. Common sense has almost arrived at 10 Downing Street via a young footballer. And it's almost, I would imagine that there must be a hint of embarrassment. Maybe not, you know, maybe they're not embarrassed. But if it was me, I would be incredibly embarrassed that it's taken this young man to arrive and, like I say, knock on the door of 10 Downing Street and say, you know, I've got a question. Can you tell me why, you know, why we've got so many young children in this country starving? Can you tell me why you're not prepared to extend the free school meals during the school holidays? How do you expect them to eat? I mean, at their core, they're very simple and basic questions that intelligent men should be able to answer. And I would imagine it's quite horrifying. I think it was Matt who mentioned, you know, as a PR disaster, how somebody has not had a word with Boris Johnson or with senior government and said, look, whatever we're doing, we need to, if, you know, if we're going to gain some quick wins here based on what's happening with, you know, the coronavirus handling and Brexit and all the other stuff, this was potentially one of the quickest wins for government ever. All they had to do was applaud, agree, accept. They'll know what the country's finances are, but I refuse to believe that it took a lot of number crunching to decide whether or not to extend the free school meals during the school holidays. And whoever was advising government to challenge this, or whoever was responsible, whether it be the party whip to, you know, how to vote on this extension of school meals, and sort of ordered the party members to vote against it, it just defies belief, because it is an incredibly elite government at the moment, certainly in the senior positions it is. And Marcus Rashford is, just because he's not from the private schools, just because he's not had the education and social upbringing, does not make his questions any less valid, does not make his points any less pertinent. And like we said at the beginning, he's lived the experience. When I would like to think that when government have any form of major issue in the country, be it, you know, the pandemic, be it Brexit, I would like to think they bring experts in. Now, if you want an expert on child hunger, bring somebody in as part of it who has lived it. And that's what he is. He is an expert in his field because he's lived it. He's been there and he's done it with his mum, with his siblings. So why would you not listen to what it is that he has to say? Why would you not take on board? Why would you not use it as an opportunity to be seen, to take him on board and have him as part of an advisory group, which, you know, I think now they're starting to look at. I think they've had a meeting sort of behind closed doors, or, you know, or over the phone relatively recently. But it just defies belief that these people in privileged positions in parliament, in government, have failed to see, not just once, but on multiple occasions, the quick wins that were available for a government that at the moment is struggling to restore faith and confidence in the country as to how they handle crises. And this is one of the crises, don't get me wrong. Child hunger is a big crisis. We can argue whether Brexit's a bigger crisis or the coronavirus is a bigger crisis. There's crises all over the place. But this was one where a gift almost arrived. It arrived on the doorstep of Downing Street and they just closed the door in its face.
Quite how they thought dishing out an MBE in the summer would end the campaign as well, I just don't know. I mean, that's completely misreading things again, isn't it? And misreading the character of who they were dealing with, and the issue, of course, of you know, it's not going to just go away when you get free school meals for one summer holiday in the midst of a pandemic, is it? So, you know, it's just being so utterly out of touch, and as you say, not taking up the reins and making it their own, if you like, of riding with it, going off what Rashford had given them, and pushing on further with it and delivering more than he was asking for, perhaps. Or
absolutely. And he, like we've said, he did it in a way that he didn't make it about Boris Johnson. He didn't make it about the Conservatives. He didn't make it about Labour. I mean, he was even... I know I've gone on about this a lot, but the levels of maturity can even boil down to the fact that, you know, he used his social media account to sort of, you know, to say to people, you know, don't abuse the MPs who voted against it. They have a right to vote against it. He's that magnanimous and that sort of astute in this whole situation that he was almost defending the ones who voted against it, because that's what mature grown-up people do. In a democracy, you respect people's rights to vote. Now, if the Tory party decide to vote against it, well, okay, I question it massively. But he was also smart enough to then come out on his social media platform and say, don't abuse the people who voted against it. They have a right to vote against it, which then just made it even worse for the Conservative Party. And then to just give him a proverbial pat on the back and ruffle his hair and say, well done, here's an MBE, now, you know, that there's your lot, is awful. It is truly awful. I don't know what the thinking was there.
I think that shows that he's not finished yet. I know they've extended the free school meals until Easter 2021, right? But that doesn't cure, that doesn't solve child poverty in Britain. I think that is his ultimate purpose. He wants to eradicate child poverty. And this, yeah, this is just a stopgap until then. So give him an MBE, give him wherever you want. It's not going to stop him. But it's going to be interesting to see what he does next year. I mean, he's already inspired people like Reece James and Chelsea fullback to do his own sort of mini campaign in London, which is making a big difference. So, yeah, I think it's going to be super interesting to see what happens next because he's not finished.
Has there been an impact on other related campaigns too, Paul, come to you on this? I mean, there's racism perhaps, or, for instance, the recent backlash against pay-per-view in football. That saw many fans groups organising, promoting donations to food banks instead of paying the money to the TV companies to watch a match. Now, I'm not saying this wouldn't have happened anyway, but has that initiative been given additional impetus by the issues Rashford has highlighted and pushed for, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think undoubtedly people would have viewed the success of Rashford's campaign and thought, well, you know, if he can get his message across to the powers that be in government or elsewhere, then there's an example to follow here. I think the pay-per-view protests, the boycotts, also successfully gained the moral high ground by, it wasn't just a case of, you know, the payments not being given to the TV companies, but the payments were made, but delivered instead to the food banks, which tied in nicely, almost piggybacked on the Margaret Rashford campaign. So yeah, undoubtedly, I think the profile that Marcus Rashford has established himself has encouraged other groups within football to push their campaigns more into the eyes of the media. I think in the UK, we don't particularly have a strong tradition of sportsmen getting involved in the political side of matters, say compared to the USA, where, you know, quite often players in the NFL, from baseball, etc., basketball, have made quite a big thing about speaking out on issues they consider important themselves as well. And maybe Marcus Rashford has established a template here for other footballers to come through and follow his example and get their points across to a wider audience. And over Raheem Sterling is thinking of setting up his own kind of foundation to support underprivileged children to try and achieve in society. I know that's a big thing in the US as well, with sportsmen there. So that's a very, very encouraging development. And I mean, you kind of wonder, you know, long term, where can Rashford go with this? Because he's been, you know, if I was Keir Starmer, I'd be making a few phone calls behind the scenes saying, look, Marcus, you know, in a few years' time when you finish with football, how would you fancy this, that and the other? Because he would be an absolute vote winner for the Labour Party, no question. And off the top of my head, I can only really think Sebastian Coe, as a sportsman, has actually gone in to become an MP and to be involved in government. And, you know, is now the time really when the opportunities to become involved in politics should be more open to sportsmen like Marcus Rashford, who obviously has got a massive constituency out there?
Yeah, absolutely so. And if we move on, we talked Matthew a little bit about, Matthew mentioned a bit about how what may come next and eradicating further child poverty, he's already mentioning focusing on people who are receiving income, but not qualifying for free school meals. So it's, I guess it's another level of poverty where it's people earning, but not earning enough to actually lift themselves out of those situations. So yeah, as you say, it'll be interesting to see what does come next. How's the perception of Marcus Rashford now then, do you think? Stuart, come to you on this one. His names and deeds are now known far beyond the confines of football, aren't they? I mean, my mum's heard of him, which says something.
I can't believe you took my quote. I was just about to say, I can give you the barometer. If my mum's heard of him, then the chances are he's doing either something incredibly good or incredibly bad. And yes, my mum has heard of him. Like I say, I think he's... We've talked about it probably for the best part of the last sort of 50 minutes. He's becoming this figure, this voice of the people. But it's strange because he's so relatable, but yet he plays football for Man United in England, which makes him incredibly unrelatable. It's a strange situation that we find ourselves in, but it still comes back to the way he's gone about this. And the way that everything that's been the fuel for this campaign has been his own personal experience. And I think that's what's done it. He's not talked about something, he's not gone on to a subject where maybe he can't relate to it or he has a passing interest in it. He's picked a subject that is relatable to him, an experience that he has lived. And when anybody decides to campaign or talk about something that's important to them, then it always comes across with greater passion, it comes across with greater intellect, it comes across with greater integrity. And from there, you then have a wider audience, which means you reach people like our mums, Aidan, which you reach that audience that perhaps you wouldn't normally, that you wouldn't normally reach. You sort of almost tap into this demographic that possibly people who just pick a cause celeb that because they think it's fashionable to, or because they want to. What this has done is it feels incredibly authentic because it is authentic. And so with that, it gathers momentum.
On that theme, Stuart, do you think it's changed people's perception of football, so amongst non-football fans, I mean? So do you think it's made people realise that footballers don't necessarily fit the sort of stereotype that we alluded to earlier of being a bit thick and one-dimensional? Obviously, you know, that's not true in any way, shape or form, but non-football fans might have this perception. Do you think he's changed that?
Absolutely. Without a shadow of a doubt. And I think he's done it. I think he's done it in the best way possible, because he's done it from a place and a position of, this is me, I'm just asking the questions. Because ultimately that is what he's doing. He is just asking the questions. He's not, you know, as Matthew said, you know, really well at the beginning, he's not on a soapbox. You know, he's not banging a drum. He's not demanding things. He's just asking incredibly awkward questions. And he's asking questions that probably a lot of people want to ask. Now, it might be people want to ask them who don't even like football, who have no care for the game, who might be a single parent with a young boy or a young girl who are into the arts and aren't into sport in any way, shape or form. But all of a sudden, there is this figurehead, this person who is actually asking the same questions that they want asking. And because nobody in their sphere of interest is asking them, they'll get behind the person who is. And I think that's what he's managed to do. He's shown his intelligence and his intellect in the way that he has unified the nation behind a cause. He's not taken football fans. He's taken people who are suffering this child hunger, this poverty. He's sort of taken all of those people with him, regardless of whether or not they have an interest in football. And it's an incredibly intelligent, articulate way that he's done it. And so with that comes the next footballer, or the next person, like I say, from the arts, be it a pop, whoever it is, but certainly the next footballer, because they do seem to suffer, like you say, with the stereotypes. The next footballer that comes along, again, with another cause or with another, starts asking the awkward questions, all, you know, it will just constantly reinforce that actually, you know, people from all walks of society have intelligence, especially if they've lived the issue and lived the subject. And that's what it's taken.
I've seen comments up here in Newcastle to the effect that it was a shame no fans were present when Man United visited a few weeks ago, so that the Newcastle fans could have given him a standing ovation. I mean, that sort of shows the unifying factor and the acclaim that he's held. And do you think, Paul, I'll come to you so I can come to Matthew for the final one on his Rashford subject, but do you think, Paul, that this acclaim is universal, or does he still have some detractors?
Well, I think it's inevitable that if you're a footballer at Manchester United, you're always going to have one or two distractors who would just look at the fact he plays for Man United and not look at the campaign he has successfully launched. So I think that's inevitable. And I think, you know, if you spend your days on social media, you don't have to search too hard to find out lots of people who are quite vociferous in their criticism of Rashford. I mean, that's a sad reflection of society, unfortunately. I mean, it's an interesting debate, isn't it, about social media at the moment? Because you wonder whether a campaign like this by Marcus Rashford in the 80s or 90s, pre-social media, would have succeeded. In some ways, social media does get a lot of criticism, you know, and sometimes justified. But in this case, it's a classic example of someone using the power of social media to cause change in society. And I think that shows that in the right hands, with the right campaign, with the right message, social media can be a powerful change. And I think one thing, I mean, we've all kind of touched upon this in different ways, the one thing he has done, in my mind, is he's got the message across so simply. Feed the kids, it's a simple message. Compare that to the government's, you know, Boris Johnson, ease in, don't ease in, go out, don't go out, stay at work, don't go to work. It's a simple message that everyone can follow. And I think because of that, it's cut across all levels of society. I think that whether you're in a 12 bedroom mansion in Buckinghamshire, or you're a rough sleeper in those Sunderland to make you happy, Aidan, you might think it's just, you know, everyone can buy into what this young man is saying. And that's why I was really interested in Stu's answers before about the impact he's had on the age group he works with, because I think he's motivated people to get involved in politics. And going back to the recent points from Matthew about the PR, PR wise, no, he's not put a step out of place. He's been an absolute classic example of how to get a justified campaign momentum and how to get the government to respond to it.
And how about that government then? I mean, Rashford's humiliated them in a way that no opposition politician or political reporter, I guess, has, or even their own self-inflicted damage to some extent in recent weeks, has managed to do. Has he put a target on his back in some ways? And how do we think, Matthew, that maybe the more right-wing press, those more supportive of the current government, would react going forwards to Rashford? Does he have to be squeaky clean?
Oh, it's a difficult one, because I remember seeing when he first started campaigning, there was a number of football journalists, a number of people in the media, sort of, they were concerned about what would happen next. I mean, you just need to look at how Raheem Sterling is treated as a young black footballer and how right-wing media is usually treat this demographic of footballer. It is a concern in moving forward, but I guess maybe because of the issue at hand, feeding children, There's nothing you can argue with there. So and the fact that all of the papers, even the right wing ones, were brought round, and you even had like the Daily Mail talking about how can the government not approve this message, approve these the free school meals. I think I would be concerned just on past form about what happens next, and if I mean. It shouldn't make a difference. It really shouldn't make a difference what he does in his personal life. But just because of past form with what right-wing newspapers are like, there's every chance that they could target him. But I don't know. This feels different. It feels like a sort of like different to the norm, and something that has made a huge difference to so many people and inspired so many people. I mean, I remember on the previous podcast, I was talking about how I was sat at my computer watching the that week, when Rashford was just retweeting all of the cafes and restaurants that were really badly affected by the pandemic, but pledging to support children in their area. It's one of the most heartwarming and just wonderful things I think I've seen in a long time. And I don't know, it feels different. It's risen above what the British public can be quite apathetic at times. We don't protest. We don't rally as much as other countries do. Like, look at France, what happens when there's, you know, how often they protest about things in that country. We don't have that in Britain. So for somebody to inspire so many millions of people in the country to come together and, you know, in a real show of community and support those really desperately in need, it's difficult to quantify how amazing a thing it is and how amazing an impact it can have moving forward. So I'm choosing to stay positive about this one.
Excellent. Well, it's been a bit of a different style of discussion for us today, but hopefully people will find it interesting. I mean, it's such a key issue today, and for it to have been given such attention by a high-profile footballer is rare indeed, but refreshing. The current score for anyone counting is Marcus Rashford 2, Boris Johnson 0. Who would rule out any more being added to Rashford's tally in the coming months and further down the line? We shall see on all of that. So thanks to our terrific guests once again. Matthew, fantastic stuff. And thanks again for shining such a light on this modern day hero.
No, thanks for having me on. It's been a real privilege to be on and talk about him.
Excellent. And Paul, thank you for suggesting this pod. It's been an interesting one, certainly.
Thanks, Aidan. I've enjoyed every second of it. And it's been really... fascinating today to be involved in such a wide-ranging discussion about politics, society, economics and football, all within the space of 75 minutes. And thanks to you for your consummate hosting as ever.
Oh, you're too kind, you're too kind. And thanks to you too, Stuart. Quite a subject to get into today.
Well, like I say, the minute it was muted, I was like, I'll be first in the queue for this one all day. very incredibly, definitely worth it to, its own podcast. It's a great idea, brilliantly put together.
Excellent. Well, if I can end with another quote from the man himself. He recently said, as a collective, we are so powerful and we all have a role to play in this. We will not give up on the future of this country. Thanks for listening, everyone. Do join us again next time. Bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.